This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to our brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, strap yourselves in for some comic book talk, especially this episode. But this is Geekscape. We usually talk pop culture. That would be movies, video games, comic books, all that stuff that you experience. Let's say if you're a big fan of like going to Comic-Con or LA Comic-Con or any of the comic conventions near you. Sorry if I'm a little discombobulated. Is Instagram working for you guys? Sometimes I do the live stream and sometimes I do it through Instagram. Is that something that you people care about? I don't think it's really working right now on the Instagram. And whenever I check during the show, if people are watching on Instagram, they dip in, dip out. I don't think that for a long form conversation show like mine, the Instagram thing really works. I think Instagram's great. It's fun for sharing photos. Maybe it's fun for doing a very small bite-sized, hey, what's up? Maybe an announcement or something like that. But for a long form conversation, I just don't think you're incentivized on your phone to not scroll away from the Geekscape episode. So unless I hear from you guys, Jonathan at Geekscape.net, I think that the Instagram feed from StreamYard, I don't think it's worth it. So I'm not going to complicate things. I'm going to take that off the table unless I hear from you guys who are like, no, dude, I have to. What's crazy too is I joke about that. I've actually gotten a couple like 100 impressions every time I go on LinkedIn. So, I mean, they say that Biden has unemployment rates down, but a lot of y'all are still on LinkedIn watching Geekscape. And I only do LinkedIn once a week on Geekscape. That's my only interaction with LinkedIn. And I get a report that's like, hey, this is how many impressions you got last week. And it is this live show. So there are people on LinkedIn watching. Doesn't matter where you're watching from, if you're watching live, or if you're maybe you're listening to this on the podcast feed, like the majority of you are, just say hi, Jonathan at Geekscape.net, or drop in on Facebook or Instagram or wherever you enjoy the show, Twitter, X, I guess. What's the other one that they started up? Threads, wherever you can find me or you can find Geekscape and all that. We're adding more shows to the Geekscape network. So just keep tuned to this channel as we promote those, talk about it. Geekscape just keeps rolling, which I enjoy. We are growing so fast that there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that Matt and I are doing. As he grows out the network, as we add shows, sometimes he tells me what the shows are that he's bringing in. And sometimes he just starts telling me and it already sounds good. So I'm like, no, dude, that sounds great. I'm excited for people who listen to this show or others to discover some of the stuff we're working on. But because it's gotten crazy, I have found myself in the last few months having crazy insomnia. The Hollywood strike did not, those two strikes or multiple strikes, that did not help. But I got to tell you, for my content, like consumption, insomnia, not so bad. Not so bad. I've talked on the show before about some of the stuff I watch like 2, 3 a.m. It's never like the super intensive stuff. Like Heidi wanted to watch the brand new season of True Detective. She wanted to start that up. Show run and directed by former Geekscape guest Issa Lopez, who I love because her audio actually got corrupted on that Geekscape. And when I told her, she came back and redid the entire episode. So Issa Lopez, who is getting serious laurels for this season of True Detective so far, deserves it because she's such an awesome person. And if you enjoy True Detective, or if you're hearing this and you're like, oh, I want to find out more about her, go back about 2-3 years in the Geekscape feed and find the episode where we talk about her film Tigers Are Not Afraid that she made in Mexico. That is just an awesome movie. And I think some of the horror fans are discovering that. I see it pop up every now and then on the Horror Movie Night Facebook group or something. Or I see it on every now and then, people saying, hey, this movie's great. I'm like, hey, if you're a Geekscape listener, you heard it here first. But I'm going to tell you what my insomnia show was this morning at 3 a.m. I don't want to see anything in like too involved, right? It's 3 a.m. I can't read a book. I'm going to read a comic maybe, or I'm just going to turn something on and hope to drift off. And this morning it was like Pokemon Connoisseur or like this. Okay, bear with me. There's a Pokemon show for kids. They're all for, you might think Pokemon's all for kids, but come on, let's not gatekeep. And this one is like a Pokemon Island hotel. It's like Pleasure Island or like the Love Boat, but for Pokemon, that they go there. And it's this girl who gets a job on this Pokemon resort island. And she has, and her whole thing is like Pokemon and people come, like trainers and their Pokemon come to the island, and maybe like a Magikarp can't swim, but so she has to find the Magikarp like an inflatable to wear, or like somebody's sad, so she has to cheer them up, or a Pikachu can't throw a lightning bolt or something. These little 16-minute animated cartoons about Pokemon trainers and their Pokemon, and it's and you got to find it on Netflix if it sounds like something you'd want to watch with your kids, or if you have insomnia at 3 a.m. And I'll tell you why I watched it, why it got on my attention, because there's all sorts of stuff that I could be watching at 3 a.m. that is similar fare, right? This stuff, the animation on this thing is actually the coolest thing about it. It looks like, remember Yoshi's Woolly World, those games that they made for the Switch and for the Wii U that looked like they were animated felt and animated like stitch work and yarn, and the whole world looked like it was something you could touch. It looked like something that came right out of like a arts and crafts. The whole show feels, maybe it's CGI, maybe it's stop motion animation, but it all feels like that. Everything looks like it's made out of felt or yarn. It's actually a really beautiful show. So I was hoping that I could put this on at 3 a.m. in the aesthetics of it, the pleasing, cool, soft aesthetics of this, it was just going to drift me off to sleep. And I was going to wake up when my alarm went off and be like, oh no, I missed the Pokemon show. Okay. Oh well, it did its job. I watched all of it, all four episodes. They're 16 minutes each. I watched over an hour of this girl trying to make Pokemon happy. Don't judge me, Geekscapist. I hear you over there in your car at work or watching right now. Don't judge me for watching my Pokemon hotel island show. It's great. And let me tell you, when it ended and Netflix didn't do that start thing where it starts loading the next episode, I was kind of sad. I was like, wait, whoa, whoa, you're playing the whole credits. There's only four of these things? Oh, my Pokemon show. All right. Well, Netflix, Pokemon Company, whoever's in charge over there, give me some more of that Pokemon chauffeur or whatever. Listen, it's great. It's great. Don't judge me. Just go enjoy it, especially if you have kids. I think they're going to like it. All right. Go watch the Pokemon show. You came here for Geekscape. Let's start it up. And we'll be right back with my friend Stephen Prince, the creator of Monster Matador, and we'll talk about how we met and why I was like, oh, this book looks awesome, and how it is awesome, and you can help the next awesome issue come out. Hang tight. right, Geekscape, the show is called Pokemon Concierge. And if you didn't think that I spent the theme song looking that up, you'd be wrong. You know, got to get this thing right. Can't have you on Netflix looking for that Pokemon show and not find your Pokemon Concierge. I'm a 45-year-old man, and I loved every minute of Pokemon Concierge. I was like, man, I hope that Magikarp learns to swim. All right, that's enough. It's time to grow up. Let's talk about serious stuff. Let's talk about comic books. my friend Steven Prince is a very new friend. I was walking around LA Comic Con between panels, and I spend most of my time at conventions at Artist Alley. I want to be with the creators, right? I want to shake hands with the creators. I want to learn about their storytelling, and I want to find guests for Geekscape because this is what we do here. We talk to creators. We love this stuff. And as I'm walking the aisles and seeing some of the friends I know, Tony Rodriguez, longtime friend, a couple aisles over, Tony Fleece, who you heard from a few weeks ago on our Comic-Con panel, LA Comic-Con panel about indie comics, and I'm just catching up with people, I see this big banner for a comic called Monster Matador. It's like a matador who fights monsters, and somehow maybe in a future Earth or an alternate Earth or something, there's monsters. And, you know, think about like Cloverfield, right? That first Cloverfield, there's a kaiju walking around and stuff like that. And I love kaiju and the matador thing. And I love people who fight them, like Hellboy, right? Like Hellboy fights monsters. And here, this one's a matador. So I was like, fuck yeah, sign me up for Monster Matador. I went over and introduced myself to the creator. I said, hey, are you the creator of the Monster Matador? And he said, yes, I'm Steven Prince, creator of Monster Matador. So I bring you now Steven Prince, creator Monster Matador. Steven, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Steven, you got kids.
Yeah, this is the banner. Yeah.
You got kids. You got to throw them up that you got to watch some Pokemon Concierge.
I never was into Pokemon as a kid. I was a little too old. And my son he's 8 years old and he's really into it.
Oh, that's something you guys can do together. Watch some Pokemon Concierge.
I'll check that one out. You
saw it. So that is how it happened. I'm walking to LA Comic Con and I see that banner. That, if you're watching this on streaming, folks, Steve's got there. Scott got it there in the background. And it just felt like the combination of two things that I thought were pretty cool. You know, it's stylistic fighting with the matador, but he's not fighting bulls on this one. He's fighting like monsters. And perusing the pages that you had out there on display and flipping through the trade of the very first trade that you have there, he's fighting kaiju monsters, he's fighting giant bugs, cool stuff. And I was like, this sounds like something that Geekscapists need to know about. So I need to know, like, where did this come from, Steven? Let us meet you a little bit.
When I was a kid, my grandfather had given me a matador cap. So I've always been interested in matadors. And as I got older, there's a Peter Sellers movie called The Bobo, in which he plays a singing matador. And anyway,
that's cool.
It's fun. It's not as well known as his other stuff, but I had watched it again. This is like probably 15 years ago or so. And I was just messing around in my sketchbook and I drew a matador. And then I drew a picture of like a Godzilla. And then I looked at it and I was like, Monster Matador. There you go. And that's where it came from. And I knew it was a good idea, you know, like you just kind of know it was just cool. And but at the time there was really no I didn't really know what to do with it or how to go about getting it done. I mean, I was familiar with the comic industry and all those things, but I was working in the toy business at the time and was focused on that. And then fast forward a few years later, I got laid off. And I had time on my hands and I just started, I went back to the character. I started drawing a little more and I actually wound up drawing. I thought it would be fun to kind of develop the character by creating a comic about it. So I actually drew like two issues of it and I had so much fun. I just started doing more. And the plan was always to kind of get a real artist, like a good artist to do it. Like we have now Fabio Alves. And what happened was I had kids and, you know, years passed and then I had another kid, just on and on. And then eventually I wound up doing 12 issues, and I decided, you know, Kickstarter had come around. There were a lot of avenues to produce, not just produce the work, but to also control it.
Sure.
A friend of mine, Ryland Grant, who did a book with Fabio called Banjax. Fabio had just finished the book. He was looking for more work. I was looking for an artist to kind of do a relaunch to, you know, do Monster Matador right. And here we are. So,
well, talk to me about, I still want to know about your background, because obviously we talk toys here, and it sounds like you were doing either product design or you were doing labeling or stuff like that for toys. But where did you grow up?
I grew up in Brooklyn and Chicago, suburbs of Chicago.
And your grandfather comes and he brings you this Matador hat. Right. Yeah. Is it actually called a Matador hat? Because one of the things that, do you have a Spanish background, Steve?
No. It's okay. Yeah. No, I don't. My grandfather's like, they're my family from way back, like has Spain.
Sure.
From Spain.
But he gives you this thing. Yeah. And I got to tell you, as a Mexican American, I'm reading this thing and I've been there's a character in a screenplay that I'm writing. Mm. And I'm about to hand it in, and the amount of research I've done on the screenplay, it's based on a true story, true event. But the real life person is descendant of bullfighters. But this is in Mexico. And so I researched so much Mexican bullfighting. The biggest bullfighting ring in the world is in Mexico City. Some of your stories, as I read the first issue of Monster Matador, really the first trade of Monster Matador, and then the first issue of this new one, Geekscape, is he's got this new thing starting up that you're going to want to be a part of called Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico. That's the sequel to the first trade of Monster Matador. I read the first issue of that, and I think that it's even tighter. It's cooler. The cast of characters you're going to want to read the first one, Geekscape, than the second one, but I think you can jump on it. The second, wherever you want to jump on it, it's a Matador fighting monsters. You're going to get it. You're going to love it. But but I was really impressed, and I had to ask about your background because I was really impressed too with the treatment of the Spanish as well.
He's actually a Mexican bullfighter.
Right.
But I do, I know a little bit of Spanish. So I came up with it at the time. My girlfriend was Mexican. So that's kind of a lot of that.
Sure.
Kind of went into it. And then I've, obviously I have friends that are Latino. And, anytime I have a question about something, I'll lean on them to ask. But it is, I do want to, it's important that it feels like real.
Absolutely. I don't care if you have a copywriter. Yeah. I don't care. I think that this is a cool story. I think that if you're Latino and listening to this, who cares if Stephen Prince is writing it? I'm a half Mexican whose name is Jonathan London. You think I don't run into the cultural gatekeeping every freaking day? I do. It's hard. My friend Andy Ratinger, we were hanging out yesterday. His name is Ratinger. His grandfather was Polish. In the instability in Europe, busted out. He got himself to Mexico. Andy he grew up in Mexico. He's only known Mexico. And he butts up against it. I think that this is stuff that is okay to talk about, but also if you're only creating for your lane, like you're only creating for an audience of you. And the truth about collaboration is, it's okay if they're not writers on the project. You are collaborating. You are finding people to copy edit it and give it some more honesty. And in that honesty, in making it more accurate, it's created resonance with somebody like me who reads it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like someone who's not Latino writing Spanish. It felt legit. Right. So I was going to give you kudos to that. Cause I really enjoy it. And of course, the giant monsters. Brian Dillon, our good friend, says, "Hey, Stephen oh, Prince hey, rocks.
We know Brian.
Everybody loves Brian. Oh my God, I love Brian so much. So what I wanted to ask right here is, you said that you drew several issues of Monster Matador on your own, and then you said, I got this new artist, I could do it properly. Tell me about those first couple issues of Monster Matador as you're finding the voice for it, maybe the pacing of the story. Are those ever going to see the light of day? Is that something that you can maybe get as an incentive?
Yeah, so they're pretty crude.
It's okay. I mean,
no, I know, okay, I know, like, I know. They're pretty crude and simplistic, and I do give them out from time to time as incentives, and I probably will for this one, because what we're doing in this new story is we're incorporating elements from those stories into this one. And I think what's nice about starting where we started, kind of, even if you don't know those 12 issues exist, which most people don't, I think it's had the benefit of giving the character a bit of weight in history that you don't normally get when a book starts and you start from the beginning. So you're kind of dropped into this world. And in the first issue,
I mean, literally that first issue has your character literally dropped in.
So that was, being, you know, that was on purpose, you know,
he's being carried by a giant bug geekscapist, and he breaks himself free, and he's got these giant bugs, like, attacking them, and he has to pull out the sword and do the Matador deal with the giant bug. So literally dropping in. Continue. You didn't pursue a publisher for those first 12 issues or anything? I mean,
they were pretty crude. I mean, they weren't really like at a level where you can publish them. But what happened was, like I said, I had kids, and they became just something for me to do while I was watching my kid.
Sure.
You know, but I wound up doing it. It wound up being this whole big kind of story of little stories that came together into one. And it kind of brought the Matador to a place in the story, which is where he is when we start Tangle of the Matadors, which was the first part of Volume 1.
And what you're doing, and as I write out, mm-hmm. One of the comics I'm working on now is a retelling of a film script, but I find in the retelling that I'm adding characters, I'm course correcting some stuff, and really like your first 12 issues, you have a chance to take another swing at the mythology, and it's it's kind of like a revision or a refinement of it, mm-hmm. and it's not unlike what happened when Game of Thrones went to TV, and some of the stories that we knew had like what was the one where the kid chokes to death, the bad kid, the prince, right, or whatever, we had people. When Joffrey dies, that whole scenario, I didn't read the Game of Thrones books, but I had friends who did, and they were like, oh, it's totally different. And some of them prefer the show. Or it was clear that at that point, you're having the creator augment the telling, either for the new format of television or the screen, or format it for just, hey, I've retold this story, and I have a better way of telling it now. All of that stuff is not against the rules. Like, you are allowed to do that. And I think it's great that you had that ability to kind of establish, bandy about a mythology at lower risks. So now here it is.
Yeah. That's what you want. Yeah. This is more, you know, I didn't have the skill as an artist to really tell the story that I wanted to tell. So what's nice is now, you know, you're right. Like, I get to go back and kind of
George R. R. Martin it.
Do it. Yeah. Do it the way that, you know, I see it and I want it to be done. So
how big is it, Stephen? Like when you think of this idea, and first off, like I still want to go back. I love talking to you guys. I talk creators. Do you see it as a movie? Do you see it as a TV show? What are some of your other stories? And then how did this one just slowly bubble to the top, you know, and be the one that breaks out? Cause I'm guessing if you're anything like me, you got 20, 30 stories in your head. And for some reason, this is the lane that you're running with now. The Monster Matador is the one you're leading with.
Yeah. It's, if you told me this would be the one, I'd probably look at you weird. But I think like a lot of writers or creative people, you know, you're always working on multiple things at once. And when I started this, I kind of really made an effort to just focus on one thing.
That's the secret.
And that's the secret, right? That's
right,
the secret.
Right, right.
And it just kind of has been, people like it, you know? And it's funny because when I go to cons, when I do signings, you know, people will always, and I would love to see it as a cartoon, a movie, a show,
sure,
whatever. But, you know, I can't tell you how many times people will, like you, see the banner, stop, look at it, go, that looks amazing. And I go, would you like to read the comic? And they go, I don't read, but let me know when that's going to be a movie.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't like that at all. What do you mean I don't read? Yeah. This is like a Geekscape.
You're at a Comic-Con.
Don't come to a comic convention if you don't want to read. Yeah. That's what they have there. That's a little concerning, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because kind of the reason to create these comics is to remove some of the barriers of entry that a big budget TV show has, which is that massive budget. And I think what's cool is once it's a TV show, once it's a movie, once it's a video game, it will then go through its next iteration of refinement for that form. I kind of just love all of it. You know, I kind of like, you know, and I think we've experienced this a lot recently with with seeing so many comic books make it to screen. Right. And thank goodness for all the factors that led to that from the late 90s into the MCU. And I mean, what a golden era for us as kids, seeing this stuff now as grownups on the big screen. And I just like all of it. Like if I watch the Ang Lee Hulk, and I remember walking out of the Ang Lee Hulk and be like, it's one of my favorite filmmakers. And I had high hopes for one of my favorite characters being interpreted by one of my favorite storytellers. And it didn't really work for me, but do they always work? Like, even on the page, do they always work? I think the onus should always be on more stories,
right?
Right, because somebody may have watched that Ang Lee Hulk and been like, "Oh, I think I like the Hulk now. That was so interesting, and that stuff with the dad and everything is so cool." But if you're snob about it and say something like, "I don't read," then that person, that may have been the comic that got him into comics, and he just cut himself off.
That's right.
I don't like that at all, Stephen. Stephen, you're fighting with your focus on your
camera. I don't know why.
And I got to tell you, buddy, it's an audio. So many more people listen on audio, man. Just like I love it.
I won't fight. I just got this camera.
It's all good. But you're a great listen for your audio listeners. Steven's a good-looking man, both blurry and in focus, and I think he's great. I just don't want you to worry about it.
I do want to say I love the Ang Lee Hulk movie.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird. It's just I mean, it's not a great movie, but I love the risks he takes. You know, I love like that he's just going for it, and he's, you know, some things land, some things don't, but I really admire that in a filmmaker or creative when they're, you know, when they're willing to take those swings.
I think as I progress in my film or comics or what Geekscape, whatever it is, I think that I find more respect for people who do that and take the swings rather than fall back on what they know is going to work every single time.
Right.
I don't think you get the great ones without a couple of those risks that did not turn out and put the egg on your face. But I think they ended up making a stronger filmmaker. How far do you think this Matador thing goes? The Monster Matador? And tell me, actually, this is probably a pretty good segue to talk about this Once Upon a Time. I want to say Once Upon a Time. Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico. Like, tell me about this story specifically. How much further along is it from the first trade paperback? Like, people are going to read the first trade paperback. Where does this story take place right after that?
So this takes place right after the first trade paperback.
Like almost immediately, correct?
Almost immediately, yeah. Mm-hmm. The way we designed this is similar to Hellboy, where it's a series of miniseries that you can read on their own, but they connect into a larger mythology. And with the first trade, Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico, which is going to run about four issues, And then we're going to have a follow-up, and that'll be our first like big phase, you know, and that's going to kind of position all the players, the Matador, and kind of,
it's like a really league. Open.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's kind of opens up. It kind of opens up the world, you know, because in these stories, we see the world through the Matador's eyes, but there's this much bigger world that we hint at. And in this storyline, this is where we start to sort of open it up and break it wide open. And now that he's reunited with his daughter and his brother-in-law, they're joined by a group of monster fighting luchadors.
Because why not? Of course.
Yeah, because why not? You know,
because why not? And, let's just keep the theme. Let's keep rocking. Okay.
Yeah. And they fight the Mega Racha, which is this giant cockroach, and the Matador as it turns out, when he was a child, he was abandoned by his father, and his mother passed away. So he lived on the streets in Mexico City, and he's deathly afraid of cockroaches. The one thing, you know, that one chink of his armor.
It's like Indiana Jones's snakes, right? It's like,
yeah, yeah. So he, you know, in the first issue, you know, they ride into town, and the Matador, he gets out, goes to fight the monster, and he realizes, he looks up and he sees it, and it's this giant cockroach, and he just,
I'm out.
He's out, you know, out. And that's where the first issue drops off. So it's him kind of overcoming that fear and fighting this thing. But I thought that would be kind of fun, because I hate cockroaches. I'm deathly afraid of cockroaches.
Really?
I thought it would be cathartic. It is not.
How do you deal with the pages? The pages come in and you're like, oh shit, what have I done?
It didn't work out the way I thought it would.
Oh, I'm sorry, but there's, you know, who says it? Like every, I think like wellness guru or like, right. you know, says the only way is through. I'm sorry, Stephen, but the only way through this is that's the only way. You got to get through this. You got to face your fears. And luckily enough, they're on the page, and you are, if anything, you are the monster Matador. You are defeating the cockroaches there on the page. Like, it must be cathartic to like write this and be like, take that. It was, you're killing cockroaches. Massive. Yeah,
because like I said, I grew up in New York where, you know, we have, there are literally mutant cockroaches.
You guys have mutant ninja turtles there. Like they have turtles.
Yeah, you saw that? Yeah, they have turtles too. Yeah.
They have turtles, mutant ninja turtles in the sewers. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But anything else, spiders, whatever, I don't care. But cockroaches, they stick.
I don't mean to laugh. I don't mean to laugh.
I literally, it's embarrassing. I literally run.
What I liked about this one, Geekscape, is though Once Upon Some Monsters, is Steven is actively adding things like he's making his world. He's adding other characters. He's making like a Justice League of like alternative monster fighters. And again, imagine like a world that has been a bit decimated and thrown off kilter by the presence of these kaiju type monsters coming out and wrecking cities and forcing communities to live within walls or to go like Mad Max style. That's kind of added. There's a bit of Fury Road element to this Once Upon a Time, Some Monsters in Mexico. And now you got these cool kind of stylistic heroes coming in. And I said Hellboy in my intro, but I think the Hellboy thing is pretty appropriate. You got, you know, Hellboy had his own RIPD, where there was somebody who's underwater. There's like a ghost person who can, you know, talk to phantasms and stuff. And I think that this is cool that you have luchadors and you're kind of living in that lane. But you're also maybe picking up some rogues as well when you get into it, which is cool. Yeah. I love seeing the entire thing come together. Alex, your friend from work, says, you know what? Steven is the absolute best.
Alex. Hey.
No
Alex
joke.
Alex is a colorist.
Well, she's doing a great job. Steven's the absolute best. No joke. Seriously, I'm not just saying that because we're work buddies. Ha ha ha. Make sure the check clears, Steven. well, let's talk about getting Alex paid. There's a bit of a Kickstarter going on with this thing, correct? I mean, the second issue of Monster Matador issue 2, Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico, is up now on Kickstarter. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. And the good news is we're funded. We always set our goal a little lower than what we need. So
never mind. That's Steven, everybody. Talk to you later. He doesn't need us. I'm kidding.
No. So, you know, but yeah, we, you know, we work part of it is we work ahead. Mm-hmm. So every little bit counts so that we can continue to make the book without interruption. And we're actually, Fabio Alves, the artist, is currently drawing issue 4. Alex is drawing issue 3. So if you're worried about, am I ever going to see the end of the story? Am I ever going to get the book? The books are done. They will be done. You know, we definitely, it's been something that, before we launch a Kickstarter, you know, we have the book and it's done. So there's no worry about whether it'll ever be finished or not.
Do you know Don Nguyen? He had a booth a few times.
Of course. Yeah.
Don's great. And as I started down this indie comic book journey myself, Don really freaked me out. He goes, make sure the book's done before you start Kickstarter. And I was like, what? I thought the whole point of Kickstarter was to pay for the damn book so you could make the book. But I think as I get down this road, I think that Don and yourself are right. Like, to some degree, and I've also heard, like, just get the first 10 pages, you can show that or something like that. But if you can get the book pretty close to finished and then start the Kickstarter to recoup, then that's kind of the strategy so that as soon as it's done, you can satisfy those rewards. And I like that. I think that's cool that people don't have to wait or be held in waiting to see if they're even going to get what they paid for. I think that's pretty cool.
Geekscapist,
it's up now. I mean, I was just going to say, if you guys go to bit.ly/Matador Kick, then you guys can find the Kickstarter for Monster Matador Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico issue 2. You can probably get issue 1. There's probably some incentives in here where you can get the whole enchilada, right?
Yeah, you can get issue 1 and 2. You can get issue 1 and 2 and the volume 1 trade paperback. We have a metal cover that we just dropped. We have a shot glass. We have t-shirts.
Wait, talk to me about the metal cover, like actually printed
metal. It's pressed on
what?
Metal. Yeah.
Okay. So for the, if let's say I have $10, I'm going to buy the digital 1 and 2. Okay.
Yeah.
So $10, Geekscapist will get you the first 2 issues of the Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico storyline. Okay. If you want a physical copy and the PDF, it's going to be $13 because you got to do shipping. You got to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Holy crap. And this is a
Cobra variant.
Cobra,
Like the Sylvester Stallone Cobra movie cover. That is awesome.
Yeah.
The Señorita Sangre, that's one of the characters in the story. I met her. She's got a variant cover. So there's some variant covers. There's a shot glass, tequila shot glass. But there's a digital catch-up as well, Geekscapist. It comes with that first trade. Is that right? You get the first
one
that'll catch you up, and then you get the new one. But I'm looking for this metal cover. What are you talking about? Really? It's pressed in metal?
I don't have a photo of it yet because I did just order some samples, so I'm hoping they come in.
Okay, but here it is. $50 limited edition metal cover. Only 5 copies of this, Geekscapist. It gets you a metal freaking copy of the main Fabio Alves Alex Zave cover. That's Alex. Hi, Alex, who's here in our chat room. A PDF of the book in a mini print. That's gonna be heavy as hell. Have you seen one of these things in person? These metal
covers? They're beautiful. They're really cool. And then you can also
never heard of this.
There's a metal cover of issue 1 and also of the Cobra cover.
Do you have any of that stuff there in your office right now, or they just haven't been made yet?
No, these are brand. This is a brand new thing we're doing.
Okay, I gotta see this.
I gotta see it too. I've had friends that have done them, so
How thin? It's a metal press. Your old school baseball cards when they used to do that in like the 90s.
Yeah, it's a metal plate, like a metal plate on top of, you know, the cover.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It's really cool. Yeah, they
I like it.
They come out really nice.
That's super cool, man. Are you going to make an extra one for yourself? You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll pocket one of the 5.
You know what you do? This is what you do. Next time somebody comes by the booth and you're like, hey, it's a comic book. And he goes, oh, I don't read? then you bleed and you slash him with the metal cover. Right. You know what? Don't do that. Don't kill. Don't do that. Don't attack your audience. Okay. But it's a cool line though, right?
But it'll get me publicity, right?
It's a cool line. Now, do not use your metal cover of Monster Matador to slash anybody open at your booth. You'll get kicked out. I've been there. I've done that.
That's true.
I just wanted to, you know what? Geekscapers, I'll be honest. I just wanted to say the stupid line. I don't read. Then you bleed. Should we make that a t-shirt? I was just going to say
you should. Yeah, it should be a t-shirt.
We'll try and sell it in Florida or somewhere they're banning books. Yeah. Like,
right.
You don't bleed. You don't read. You bleed or something stupid like that. Alex, you're in the chat room. Clean up the copy on that one. Make it funny. I have no ability to do that right now. I like this. This Kickstarter, man. I hope you hit some of these incentives because they're pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, Geekscapist, and like Steven said, the book is done. It is made. You're going to get the book. All you got to do, though, is go to bit.ly. You know, it's bit.ly/MatadorKick, and it'll take you right to this Kickstarter I'm looking at right now for the Once Upon a Monster in Mexico issue number 2. Steven, you said that you just got into creating this comic whenever you were working in toys. You got laid off. You had some free time. You got into comics. You weren't into comics before, brother. You were the guy who walked past the booth and said, "I don't read."
Oh no! You were a comic fan. Yeah, all my life. I mean, I've been making comics all my life. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to read. My parents wouldn't let me read comics, but they let me read Mad magazine. So I used to make my own Mad magazines.
Your parents were like the comics code. It was like, technically, it's not a comic. Hey, Geekscape, right. you all know that from Geekscape, is that when the Comics Code Authority clamped down on publishers for corrupting the youths, Mad, which was owned by the same company that owned DC, was like, "Oh, we're a magazine. We're not changing anything." So that's how you got Mad Magazine, and I'm guessing Cracked as well. What were some of the influences that went into this? I mean, we talked about Mike Mignola's Hellboy. We talked about some of that stuff, but those are, Mike Mignola and the Hellboy thing is more like a late 80s and a 90s thing. What were some of the influences going into, you as a storyteller?
Yeah. I mean, I always say it's Mad Max meets Godzilla with a little bit of a telenovela thrown in.
Love it, of course.
That Peter Sellers movie, I loved. I mean, 80s action movies. The first volume is really a love letter to those.
It's pretty over the top, yeah.
Yeah, we did Afropocalypse is our love letter to Predator. And Tango of the Matadors is just, it's just pure adrenaline. It hits the ground running. You know, like you said, he comes in, you drop yourself into the story and it doesn't stop from there.
I was like, and the characters are already talking to each other like you know them and Geekscape. So I first started reading that first issue, I was like, wait, this is the first issue, right? And then I was like, oh dude, Jonathan, what do you need? Geekscape, if you read that first issue and you're like, wait, the characters already know each other and this and that, it's a matador. Hold on, this is all you need to know, Geekscape. It's a matador who fights monsters. And you're going to catch up pretty quick. You don't need anything else.
Yeah.
It's a matador being carried by a giant bee monster that shoots acid from this alien-like projectile mouth thing. And he fights him. And he's got another matador buddy. And they're going to meet other people. But all you need to know early on is monster bad, matador good. They're going to fight each other. That's all you need. All right? So don't do what I did and be like, wait a minute. Did Steven not give me the first issue? No. You're smarter than me, Geekscape. Just roll with it. Barbara Dillon was like, I'm not going to let Bryant have all the fun. Two great gents.
Barbara's here. Wow. Hey.
You know what? I like Brian. I like Bryant a lot. But when Barbara gives you a stamp of approval. No, I love Bryant. I love Bryant. Have you met their kids?
Yeah, of course.
Bryant and Barbara are the sweetest little babies of all time. They're the cutest. And I got to tell you, every time, have you seen the commercial they're in?
Yeah.
Their daughter's in this freaking commercial. And yeah. I was watching basketball at a bar the other night with Heidi and her friend. And I'm only going so because Laker games are like not shown here in LA. Like you have to get like a super package, but yeah. I just want to watch the other team. And right. so I wanted to watch the other team. I'm sitting here watching the game. And I'm literally thinking about Bryant and Barbara. I think they were even in our conversation where we're bringing up how sweet their family is. And I look up and I go, that's the kid we're talking about. The person at their table is like, what do you mean?
Yeah, that
we were just talking about their kids. Yeah. Yeah. And the commercials on the TV, I was like, that's literally the kid we're telling you is adorable. It's on the screen right now. I love it. I hope that kid is getting, I hope those kids are getting their college paid for.
There's two of them.
Yeah, I think they cast twins to play one. Yeah, that's how it is. When one's sleepy, you bring the other one in.
Pretty wild.
So I had asked you, Stephen, about your influences, and you said the influences from Monster Matador, but I want to know what you grew up on. Like you said, Mad Magazine, but when it came to comics, when it came to the stuff that got you your pen to page, your pencil to page, like what were those two of those storytellers? And they couldn't be literary. They might just be things that you read, but weren't necessarily comics. What were some of the storytellers that you grew up being like, yeah, this is my lane right here?
The Claremont X-Men was really, and I started that in a weird period, and I loved it. It was that Australian period where they
were. Oh my God, the Mark Silvestri post Fall of the Mutants. Yeah. It's awesome. Where they're fighting the Reavers and everybody thinks they died in Dallas.
Yeah. And then after that, they're just kind of like hanging out. But I loved that because it was more like they were superheroes, but it was about the characters, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that cover where Wolverine is crucified on that X.
Oh, that was my first issue. That was the first one. That was the first one I got. And I was,
incredible. And then you worked your way back through John Byrne, who led you to Mark Silvestri. Yeah. Like I love the Mark Silvestri stuff, and that I think is similar. It was mm-hmm. that really coming out of Inferno. I think Inferno was like a big thing too. The crossover there at Geekscape, I think it was the late 80s. In the Fall of the Mutants, which led to the Australian Outback stuff. Yeah. I just reread the last half of Days of Future Past last night again.
Yeah. It's great.
It's so effing good. The Claremont stuff is amazing. And did you hear this story that coming out of the current Krakoa era, mm-hmm. Marvel threw the bank at Jim Lee and wanted to get him back on it? You heard about that? That Marvel Geekscape
saw something about that. Yeah.
Was like, what do we do after this hugely successful Krakoa era that started with Jonathan Hickman is turned into this stuff, but it's coming to a close? What's the next era of the X-Men? And supposedly they threw money at Jim Lee, and Jim Lee just could not commit to doing an interior book because it's a lot of work. But oh my God, could they have gotten Chris Claremont back? Would you want to see Chris Claremont back on the X-Men? That would have been crazy.
You know, I'll be honest, living in an era where everyone seems to be coming back, I don't know.
We just had J.M. DeMatteis on one of the Geekscape shows talking about Kraven's Last Hunt.
Yeah.
He just did book. Christian Blatt or Marvel Movie Talk or one of these shows on our Geekscape network, Geekscapist. They had J.M. DeMatteis talking about his seminal work, Kraven's Last Hunt. And I looked up and was like, oh my God, Christian Blatt, you are beautiful for bringing that creator onto the Geekscape network. I love it. Okay, so we got the Claremont stuff. The Claremont stuff, man, it doesn't get much better than that. What are some of the other books? What about indie books? I mean, you got an indie book here. Yeah. What are some of the people that inspired you to go the indie route?
Paul Pope was a big one. Mm-hmm. I got onto him like right as THB was coming out. So I was there from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I loved, movies have been a big influence. When I was older, when I really started getting into movies, it was that era with Tarantino, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, El Mariachi from Robert Rodriguez, Clerks, John Woo. I mean, The Killer had just popped into video stores, Hard Boy. So all that stuff was just such a huge, huge influence on me.
And Geekscape, I think you're going to see some of that DNA here in the Monster Matador, especially the, I mean, the Robert Rodriguez stuff for sure.
That's really big.
And I think I'm picking up what you're putting down, dude. Like in Geekscape, you're hearing what Steven's saying. It's in the pages of the Monster Matador. This stuff is a love letter to that, plus kaiju, plus some Hellboy team versus monster stuff. I really am a big fan of this stuff. I think it's a lot of fun, and I'm really happy that your voice is out there, Steven. I mean, the double take I did walking past your booth at LA Comic Con. You got me. luckily I read, but you got me. It was like, let's make a book for Jonathan. It was like, you didn't even know I existed and you made a book for Jonathan. That's what you did with this Monster Matador. Are you going to spin a new book off of it, or maybe one of your other creations? Is this a bigger universe? I don't know.
Hopefully, you know, fingers crossed. But after Once Upon Some Monsters, we're going to do a one shot with the Luchadors before going back into the Matador. It's all gonna weave its way into each other. I would love to do just a spinoff of the Luchadors. We have some other characters, some other ideas. So it's a big. I mean, I could keep doing this forever. I have, you know, so many ideas for it. So hopefully,
well, Geekscapists, there's a pretty awesome thing that you can do to help Steven keep doing this forever. And our new friend Alex, who's in the comments and this and that, you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, go over to your computer and type in bit.ly/MatadorKick, and it'll take you to the Kickstarter, and whatever you want to donate, they've hit it. They've hit their goal. This is for the stretch goals now, like that crazy foil metal cover, and get yourself it could be a PDF. It could be whatever you want to donate, and get yourself a copy of this book, and join the fan club, and let's see the full story come together, man. I think it's great.
It's a lot of fun. It's funny because people, you know, you mentioned that it's about a matador who fights kaiju. People always ask me, so what's the book about? And they say, it's a matador who fights kaiju. And they go, okay, how does he fight? Like, what do you mean he fights kaiju? You know,
what do they need, man? Literally. Man, people, what is up with people, man? Like, what else do you need?
I'm like, they're like, does he have a laser sword? Does he have,
you ever seen a matador, dude? Like, it's a sword.
Yeah. And that's part of the fun. That's kind of the part of the fun is like, you know, how's he going to defeat these things? But
what are you talking about? Little, if the thing is the size of a skyscraper, you know what you would do? You would put the sword as deep as you can into it, and you would slide yourself all the way down the skyscraper, gutting that thing. And what I like, are you reading the, what is the Shaolin monk or Shaolin cowboy?
Oh, Shaolin! I love that.
Jeff Darrow book. Holy, talk about somebody splitting open some giant monsters!
Yeah,
I love Shaolin Cowboy. Another indie book where there's a small dude killing major monsters.
Yeah.
That is an awesome book. I love Shaolin Cowboy, and I could have guessed my friend Steven liked it as well.
that book is it's incredible.
It's a comic book. People like, what do you mean? How does a matador fight a monster? Yeah. Like, that's kind of the fun of it. Do you want? You know what I'm saying? Like, that is some high stakes stuff. Read the book, find out. I challenge you, Geekscapists, to do the same. Check out the Kickstarter, guys. Go to Kickstarter and search. If you forget the Bitly, just go to Kickstarter, search for Monster Matador. You'll see the active one under our good friend Steven Prince's name. Man, dude, thanks for coming on Geekscape.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
You got me so excited. I feel like I just talked the whole time. You got me so excited. I was like, and then.
We'll do it again for the next one.
Dude, I can talk. I think the problem is I can talk. So, okay, let's figure this out. Let's talk to Matt Kelly. You want a podcast on the network, or you can just do all the talking without me jib jabbing the whole time?
Sure. Be all monster matador all the time.
I think Matt's going to go for it at that point. Yeah. He's going to be like, this is great. All right, Steven, I hope I've thrown the football for your book as far down the field as I can.
Thank you.
I hope people check it out. I loved checking you out, man. I loved meeting you. I can't wait to see you maybe at WonderCon or San Diego Comic Con.
I will have a booth at San Diego. We'll be in small press M03. Okay. Same spot we were last year. I will likely be at WonderCon.
Okay.
At the CAPS booth. So, and I'll be at Comic-Con Revolution in Ontario. In
I heard that's a great convention.
It's a great show. It's a really fun show.
When somebody told me there was a comic convention in Ontario, which Geekscapist is about an hour, a little over an hour east of Los Angeles,
yeah,
in like the Inland Empire, I was like, oh, okay, sure, whatever you say. Like, you're just trying to get me to a convention in the middle of nowhere. And then people are telling me, dude, Chris Claremont, all these different people went to Comic-Con Revolution. Yes. I start to see my friends putting up promotions that they're going to be at Comic-Con Revolution.
Yeah, this will be my third year. It's a great show. I think they have Adam Kubert this year.
Oh my God.
That's the best of the best. Yeah, they get some great guests. And what's nice is there's a dealer room, and then the artist alley room is its own separate room.
That's the best. Like New York Comic Con. That's the coolest thing about New York Comic Con. Yeah. It's like a hangout area of cool creatives.
Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, it's close enough that it's definitely worth checking out.
Okay, you just sold me a ticket because no, I'm serious. Like, it's like in May or something like that. It's like in May or April.
It's
or something
May. Like, I want to say it's May 19th and 20th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn it, you're filling up my dance card. I like this. Okay, yeah. Comic Con Revolution and Geekscapist. You're listening to this. I think I'm going to spend this Sunday at a small little con in Pasadena. I really like that con. It's nice. It's like something you can walk through in a couple hours, say hi to friends, and maybe Geekscapist will bring a recorder with me there, and maybe I'll try and talk to some people. I don't know. We'll see. I know our two little late feed boys are going to be there. I'm going to be there. And maybe if you subscribe to Geekscape and listen to this podcast, you'll hear some more stuff from all of these conventions, including when Steven does an hour at the Geekscape Comic Con booth in San Diego with us as well. You can step away from your booth for an hour and come sign with us. All right. We have a nice 10 by 10 over there. Okay.
Yeah.
Geekscapist. It's all coming together. It's all coming together. And you're a part of it too, Geekscapist. The whole point of the show is to bring you cool stuff that maybe you haven't heard about, like Steven's book, and filter in some bigger names here and there. We love doing that, and the best thing you can do to help it keep going is we bring you the show for free. All I ask, go to whatever podcatcher you're listening to this on and leave like a 5-star review, write a nice little review for us, and be like, man, wish Jonathan would, he's funny sometimes, but I'd like him to let the guest promote your book. Jonathan gets too excited. Oh no. That's the problem. I get too excited. I love this stuff too much. Yeah. But Geekscapist, if you'd like to cut me out of it, go find each other on social media. The Geekscape Forever group on Facebook is a great way to do that. Just go to that group, join up, talk to each other. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter, X, whatever it is. You can find us on Threads. You can find us everywhere. Search for Geekscape. We also have over 30 shows across the network now from all sorts of pop culture topics like wrestling, music, horror films, filmmaking, all that stuff. Just go search for Geekscape. You're going to find some great stuff. Matt and I have been working really hard with the rest of the network on bringing you guys some really cool pop culture stuff with no gatekeeping. We don't hate. We create. That's what we're here for. And we're just going to push the positivity forward. You can tell what happens when a kid gets excited like myself. I just rolled through that conversation with Steven. Dude, love you so much, man. Where can people find you on socials?
Monster Matador. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Monster Matador. There's also monstermatador.com.
Fantastic. Thank you, Steven, so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, Geekscapist. Over and out.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.